Welcome to a special four-part series we have presented in the past on 89.1 KHOI FM, Story City, Ames, and surrounding communities, Science Bites. I am Mike Metz, along with Sam Wormley. We hope you enjoy this presentation, a dramatization of some basic astronomy facts.
Quoting from Alan Lightman's A Modern-Day Yankee in a Connecticut Court and Other Essays on Science, Conversations with Papa Joe. The third evening. The next day, I had three lectures to give, which didn't go so well, and late meetings with students. It was 7 o'clock by the time I got home. I began wondering if I'd ever see my great-grandfather again. To my delight, he appeared that evening in his usual place, chipper and perched in the wingback, scarcely after I had gotten the pipe going. Apparently, he was getting the knack for this strange kind of travel.
"In my time, I used mostly Prince Albert in that pipe,"
he said, taking a broad whiff of the smoke.
"Named after the Queen's husband. Now there was a woman with good common sense, and she wasn't afraid to speak her mind either."
We chatted for a while about Queen Victoria, whom my great-grandfather was well up on. From there, Papa Joe moved to the Great War and how he nearly went broke when the prices of labor skyrocketed and he felt morally bound.
"We signed a contract
to stick to the costs.
I'm a man of my word."
In his contracts.
"The deal is a deal."
I loved hearing his stories. After a few minutes, however, Papa Joe grew impatient and got up from his chair to look out the window.
"You really haven't kept your promise to tell me about the stars."
I started to speak, but he continued.
"I used to take your father out in the backyard at night to look at the stars. That's when we all lived in the stone house on 16th Avenue South. Your grandfather was always too busy with business."
"Dad did the same with me when I was a boy," I said.
"What are stars, anyway?"
"Well, to begin with, stars are pure gas, gigantic balls of gas, much larger than planets. Their gravity holds them in, the same way that the Earth's gravity keeps our air from flying off into space."
"All gas, you say? Confounded flimsy material for heavenly bodies, if you ask me. So, if I dove into the sun, which is a star as I remember, I'd never hit solid ground all the way to the center."
"Right. Of course, you'd get burned to a powder long before that, bones and all. Stars give off a great deal of heat as well as light."
"I have no plans to visit one of those balls of fire, beautiful as they might be. But tell me, young man, how can you be so sure that the sun isn't solid in the middle, with the gassy part only a covering, like the air around the Earth? Have your solar scientists gotten up their courage and launched themselves into the sun?"
"Hardly. Scientists these days prefer to take their adventures through frightening equations, according to which the sun requires a temperature of millions of degrees to keep itself inflated the way it does, against the inward pull of gravity. At that temperature, you can be sure any solid matter would be instantly vaporized. The sun's got to be gas all the way through."
"So, now it's equations after smudges of light through a telescope?"
said the old gentleman, jiggling some coins in his pocket.
"Please answer me this. Why don't stars burn themselves up in such a high heat?"
"They do, but not for a very long time. Stars outlive ordinary fires because they don't run on chemical combustion. You burn wood or gasoline or flammable gas, and you're getting energy only from the outer parts of the atom. If the sun ran on that kind of energy, called chemical energy, it would be out of fuel in a few thousand years. What you need in a star is a different kind of energy, called atomic energy. That's the energy you get from the inner parts of the atom. It's set free when two atoms fuse together to make a larger atom, which happens only under the higher heat, much higher than in chemical fires. In the sun, for example, atoms of hydrogen gas are constantly joining to make atoms of helium gas. Pound for pound of fuel, atomic energy is millions of times more powerful than chemical energy. It should keep the sun shining for billions of years." Papa Joe nodded.
"I love the way nature has various energies for each different purpose. Like your great-grandmother, with outfits for every occasion. Sometimes she wanted to shimmer and sometimes blaze. But back to the sun. Can your scientists predict what will happen after it's burned up its atomic fuel?
Yes, near the finish, it should change the brightness and change its color, swell up 100 times its own size, and engulf the Earth. Then, when it's entirely exhausted its fuel, it should collapse to a very dense sphere about the size of the Earth, growing dimmer and dimmer and colder and colder. The outer planets of the solar system, the ones not boiled away earlier, will continue to orbit a dead central mass.
It doesn't seem right. The sun ending its career, shrunken up but kept on, like an old general with a desk job.
He sat for a while, staring at the fire.
I just don't see how you can figure so far in advance. Last night, it was billions of years in the past, and tonight, it's billions of years in the future.
Some of the predictions come from equations.
You talk about your damned equations as if they were the Ten Commandments. Where do they come from, anyway?
To be honest, I wouldn't put complete trust in equations either, if that's all I had to go on. But they're observational evidence. Astronomers have looked at a great many stars of all different ages and stages of development, and from this they believe they can piece together the life story of a single star. Papa Joe thought for a moment.
That must be the same way those agricultural fellows figure out the way a redwood tree grows. From what I heard, a redwood lives a lot longer than a man, but I guess if you studied a lot of them and saw some just planted and some throwing their first leaves and some getting old, you could get a pretty good idea how a single tree lives out its entire life.
The old gentleman got up from his chair and put 3 more logs on the fire. He remained standing comfortably by the fireplace, resting his arm across the mantel.
From what you've said, I'd imagine that space should get darker and darker as each star goes out one by one.
It's not quite like that, Papa Joe. New stars are continually being born throughout the galaxy. The basic ingredient, gas, is everywhere, strewn between the stars. To make a star, the gas has to bunch up, which happens here and there because of all of the activity in space. Once such a clump forms, it collapses under its own weight, causing it to heat up. Eventually, the temperature is high enough that atomic fusion can get underway and the thing becomes a star. We've actually seen newborn stars and the gas that produced them.
Death followed by birth. It seems like the law of nature, but with stars, I guess there are a lot of cold bodies left floating through space.
The end isn't that gruesome for all stars. The ones much heavier than our sun depart with a much grander flourish. They explode at the end, and while doing so, detonate their insides to space. They briefly outshine the whole galaxy. We call those stellar explosions supernovae.
That's the way to go. I don't imagine that calm fellow Aristotle, who liked his universe undisturbed, would be happy with supernovae.
Well, he wouldn't be happy with a great many unheavenly bodies that astronomers have recently found. A lot of them in our own galaxy. For example, there are pulsars and black holes created by the collapse of stars that can't hold themselves up under their own weight. A pulsar is an extremely dense sphere with a mass of a star and a diameter of about 10 miles. It spins once around every second or less and spews out a stream of energy into space like a rotating searchlight. A black hole is a mass with such high gravity that not even light can escape its surface. Large black holes, it is believed, chew up and swallow whole stars.
It's a wonder our own solar system has got on so peaceful-like, with all of the spinning and spewing and chewing.
Our stretch of the galaxy happens to be very quiet. The interesting goings-on are much further out. Even with a telescope, some of these pulsars and black holes are a devil to find. Unlike stars, many of them shine mostly with X-rays, which the human eye cannot see, and which never get through the Earth's atmosphere in the first place. Luckily, we've figured out how to launch small man-made moons called satellites, which orbit the Earth above the atmosphere. Astronomers have gotten into the act and begun loading their instruments onto these satellites. The way it works is that the instruments catch the X-rays coming in from a particular direction in outer space, convert them into electrical signals, and change these into a kind of a Morse code and broadcast it all the way by radio back to humans waiting below. On the ground, scientists take the information and try to reconstruct a picture of the object that gave off the X-rays.
That certainly doesn't sound like what I remember of astronomy. I knew a professional astronomer once, a big man named Thayer, who lived over there on Fifth Avenue. When it was time to do some observing, he'd pack up several days of sandwiches and good books for those cloudy nights, and then he'd travel to the top of a mountain somewhere and sit at the eyepiece of a telescope, making notes, scribbling drawings, and simply enjoying the view firsthand. I wonder whether these X-ray fellows have fun in their work.
Some of them do, at least the ones I know. They hang up their graphs and their charts and their numbers sent down by the satellites, and they stare at them, and pretty soon they start talking about all these pulsars and black holes like they were their cousins in Nebraska. Each one's got a name. There's Scorpius X1, and there's 3U0900-40, and there's Cygnus X1, and so on. For each of them, the astronomers will tell you how many trillions of miles away it is, how heavy it's likely to be, how large it's likely to be, how fast it's spinning, what it would look like if your eyes could see it, and dozens of other details. These things are real. Astronomers will never get anywhere near them. Astronomers will never, ever see them, but they're real. The instruments say they're real, so they are real.
What's real and what's not is a swamp I'll steer clear of. But I do like the faith of modern scientists and their gadgets, these black holes. I'd like to hear more about them, if you don't mind. You mentioned that light can't get away from a black hole because of its gravity.
Yes, that's why they're called black. A black hole doesn't have a material surface like a star, but has a boundary. And within that boundary, any light emitted, even headed out of the black hole, will eventually turn around and be pulled back to the center by gravity. The size of the boundary varies in proportion to the mass inside. For a black hole with the mass of our sun, its boundary would be a sphere a few miles across.
Wait just a minute. Did I take you to say that we've picked up X-rays from black holes? How do X-rays get out from one of those things when light can't?
I'm sorry. I should have explained that. The old gentleman is quicker than many of my students. The X-rays from a black hole don't come from the black hole itself, but from hot gas rushing toward it. What we're looking at, or rather what our instruments are looking at, is a sort of a cocoon of shining gas surrounding the black hole. Black holes with no gas around them are completely invisible. They're harder to find.
But of course, for you and your friends, invisibility is no handicap against seeing things.
Well, that's truer than you might think, I said, smiling. Even if every black hole were bare and invisible, a great many scientists would still believe in them. The equations predict they exist.
You keep dangling those damned equations,
my great-grandfather said, and began to grow dim. Come back one more night, I pleaded to his vanishing form. For the equations, just one more night.
One more night.
After Papa Joe had gone, my study felt very empty. To be continued.